It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It was a comfortable victory, although somewhat closer than you might expect in a deeply red state. Cindy Hyde-Smith wasting no time, saying she's going to go back to Washington this morning and get right back to work. Take a look at the race board. You can see the margin here. Hyde-Smith made some gaffes during the campaign that were deemed by some as racially insensitive, but she credits President Trump's support for bringing her to victory. Take a listen.
Boy, being on that MAGA wagon, as we called it, the Make America Great Again bus, we have bonded, we have persevered, we have gotten through things, we were successful today.
President Trump tweeted his congratulations to the senator, saying, "We are all very proud of you," and Hyde-Smith's opponent added his congratulations as well.
She has my prayers as she goes to Washington to unite a very divided Mississippi. And she has my prayers and my willingness to help her to do that.
And this runoff settles the final Senate race of the midterm elections. And so once the new Congress is sworn in, the balance of power in the Senate will be 53 Republicans to 47 Democrats.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you this morning. That's the news from Mississippi yesterday. And of course, as Jonathan just said on Fox News, the margin now will be 53 Republicans to 47 Democrats in the Senate. And one of the reasons that's so important is things like judges. We have right now, there's a judge in North Carolina. I can't get into that story with great detail this morning, but the left is coming after him, all, you know, no holds barred, coming after him to try to get him defeated. And there's like a one vote margin. And they're thinking they may have to call in Mike Pence to break that tie because, as we know, Jeff Flake from Arizona has pledged he will not support any Trump-supported judges until some law is passed in the Senate that prevents the president from firing Robert Mueller. So there you go. That's how it goes. But Cindy Hyde-Smith makes the 53rd Republican in the Senate, and that should, because of those moderate Republicans who really are liberals, they're not moderate. It's going to make a difference. I don't know about Cindy Hyde-Smith. We'll see. I guess her voting record has been pretty good so far. So we'll just see if she continues to support the president and his nominees and other things, too. All right. So that's not the only thing happening, though. But you know that on the southern border, we have something like 10,000 people in Tijuana trying to get across the border, at least waiting to get across the border. I think they gave up on their assault on the border on Sunday, which is a violent attack, throwing rocks, trying to injure some of the Border Patrol. Some of them actually were injured. And so now they're just in waiting, trying to figure out what to do. NBC did a good report on this. Let's listen.
Hey, good morning, Angie. I want to show you, this is the breakfast line here at the shelter for the migrant caravan. And this is some of those women and children that you've been seeing. They are standing here in line as they do twice a day. And some of them may be eligible for asylum in the United States. But Andrea, they are the minority of this caravan. Instead, most of the members of this caravan, this is a line for single men that you can see. And it stretches much longer as it does every single morning. Many of these men tell us that they heard in Honduras that it would be easy to cross into the United States. Some of them told us that they had heard that there were programs, work programs, that they would be eligible for. And so now that they are here in Tijuana and they have realized that it is very difficult to get into the United States, especially after what happened on Sunday, some of them are deciding to turn back. In fact, I want to show you this over here. This is a tent that's been set up by a bunch of different governmental agencies here in Mexico. But this is where people come if they want to go back to Honduras. Honduras or Guatemala or El Salvador. These are people that have decided that it is time to go back and that they don't have the opportunities that they wanted here. Meanwhile, Mexico, the city of Mexico, the country of Mexico is also extending humanitarian visas to a lot of these migrants, as well as putting them up into jobs. So that's what we're seeing right here. 81 people from the migrant caravan yesterday decided to go back to Honduras. And these people here say they may be back in their country in a matter of days.
All right, that was an NBC report. And interestingly enough, you have to stop and think about this. Now, it's not over yet, because they're still there right on the border and it's not really resolved, but they did not manage to invade. They did not manage to get across. And we can actually thank one person for that. Honestly, only one person. We can't thank the Congress, the Senate, or the House. We certainly can't thank the judicial system, because the judges have been at odds and have tried to stop the president in every way from limiting out-of-control immigration policies, legal and illegal. They've done nothing but stop him. It's just the will of one man. That's the president of the United States, Donald Trump, who, as last time I looked, he's not up for election. The last time I looked, the 2018 midterms are over. It has been his will to try to develop and lay the line down for the sovereignty of the United States. It's been his will that has prevailed. And I thank God for that. So, like I said, the story's not over yet, but really that's the reality of this. This is a little blurb from Department of Homeland Security. Well, it isn't a public blurb, but someone that sent this to me, and I want to share it with you. In response to the misreporting from multiple outlets, I wanted to highlight the rampant fraud taking place at our southern border. Aliens know that if they bring any minor with them, they will be apprehended by Border Patrol and released into the interior of the United States. This is a direct result of the Clinton-era Flores Settlement Decree that has created a massive loophole which allows alien family units to illegally cross the border and enter the United States after a short detention. This well-known loophole acts as a magnet for family units and entices smugglers to use children as a way to gain access to the United States by posing as a family unit. Word has gotten out. Over the last 2 years, we have seen a 110% increase in male adults showing up at the border with minors. Further, from April 19, 2018 to September 30, 2018, 507 aliens were encountered as a family unit and were separated as they were not a legitimate family unit. And it goes through and gives a bunch of statistics, which you get the gist of it. The data does not show, nor does DHS assert, that all minors apprehended as part of a family unit are illegitimate, but it does indicate that there is a significant problem that provides DHS the needed authority to protect the best interests and welfare of all children. And so that's what's happening at the border. I'm just seeing, as I'm sitting here talking to you, Fox is just reporting that another caravan has arrived, so here we go. And that's just the way it's going to be. And I guess if they just keep coming and overwhelm us, I'm not sure what we will do. So it's not over. As I said before, I wouldn't want you to think I'm saying that it's over. It isn't. But at least for now, sovereignty, the American sovereignty in our border has held fast. All right, something else is happening. You've heard smatterings of it lately. Many are saying that Robert Mueller's report is going to be coming out. You heard that Alan Dershowitz said that he thinks it's going to be damning. Others are saying, Andy McCarthy is saying, he doesn't really think that report is all that imminent. And I'll get into that in just a second. But John Roberts had a really good report on this last night. Let's listen.
The White House today punted when asked about a report that former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort met with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on several occasions, most recently in March of 2016, just before Manafort became the president's delegate wrangler.
Wondering if you know if that meeting took place.
Certainly remain confident in the White House's assertion that the president was involved in no wrongdoing, was not part of any collusion. The things that have to do with Mr. Manafort, I refer you to his attorneys.
From his jail cell in solitary confinement, Manafort fiercely denied the story in a statement saying, "This story is totally false and deliberately libelous. I have never met Julian Assange or anyone connected to him. I have never been contacted by anyone connected to WikiLeaks, either directly or indirectly." WikiLeaks also issued a denial today in a tweet saying WikiLeaks is willing to bet The Guardian $1 million in its editor's head that Manafort never met Assange. The report came after Special Counsel Robert Mueller announced that Manafort had breached the terms of his plea and cooperation deal by lying to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Special Counsel's office on a variety of subject matters. While Manafort is already in jail, cooperating with Mueller could have led to a more lenient sentence. Now Manafort faces a full 10 years in prison.
That's the first part of his report, and I want to stop for a second. Again, John Roberts of Fox. Now, Paul Manafort, of course, has been the person that has been received the most severe sentence of anything that Robert Mueller has produced from his investigation. And, of course, none of the things that Paul Manafort was charged with had to do with anything remotely related to Russian collusion. So now Andy McCarthy explains in his article this morning that Mueller understands fully that if he can revoke, if he says that Paul Manafort was not perfectly honest with them, that will put in danger a presidential pardon. And, of course, there's a lot of a danger here for Paul Manafort in his personal life. And, of course, the sentence that he may actually get, it may lead to some state charges, which would not be a president can't pardon someone on state offenses. And so it's just, I think the point would be that my understanding reading several accounts here is that Manafort says that he fully complied. Others are saying that it's just that Robert Mueller, special counsel, did not hear what he wanted to hear. So Manafort is saying, they want me to say certain things, I'm not going to say them, which sounds a lot like Jerome Corsi. Jerome Corsi, of course, is you've heard of him. You've seen him in the news lately. I have not had him as a guest since I've been on the show here, but I've interviewed Jerome many times. He was with WorldNet Daily for a number of years. He's written a number of books. He is a Christian. Interesting guy. I don't claim to know him well, but I would say that he's saying publicly that he said, they can put me in prison the rest of my life. I'm not going to sign a lie. And he said that the Mueller's counsel has been trying to force him to go on record. They're trying to force him to say that he lied to them. But he said, I didn't lie to them, and I'm not going to say it. He said it's one of the most frightening times of his life. He says he's been quizzed about other specific topics for months. And he just says, he's reported that Mueller has offered him a plea deal on one count of perjury, but that he's not going to take it because it would require him to sign a statement saying he knowingly and willfully lied, which he still denies. Have you noticed that that's the theme? That's what Mueller's getting everyone on. This is the way it's happening to General Flynn. They all lied. That nothing else, just they allegedly lied to the FBI. Of course, the FBI agents who interrogated General Flynn said he didn't lie. So go figure. We know that one of them was Peter Strzok. It's just bizarre. And so there was a really interesting article in Fox News, pretty complex, written by Brooke Singman. And I think actually we'll put this on our Facebook page because if you're following this, I think you should read it. But it's what Brooke says is there are lots of complications in this final stretch. She talks about Paul Manafort, which I just described, in Jerome Corsi, but also George Papadopoulos, who is going, he's already gone in for his 14-day sentence, but he's beginning to speak up about how he has been treated and how they've tried to force him to do things. He says, and then President Trump tweeted yesterday, wait until it comes out how horribly and viciously they are treating people, ruining lives for them refusing to lie. Mueller is a conflicted prosecutor gone rogue. The fake news media builds Bob Mueller up as a saint when in actuality he is the exact opposite. He's doing tremendous damage to our criminal justice system where he is only looking at one side and not the other. Heroes will come out of this and it won't be Mueller and his terrible gang of angry Democrats. And so I agree with that assessment. I think that Bob Mueller reminds me that the prosecutor for Jean Valjean in Les Miserables who would not let things go. Remember that story? I can't remember his name. It was French. But he just was bound and determined to find Jean Valjean guilty. And that's what Robert Mueller reminds me of. It's got his pride. His buddy Comey has been disgraced. And they're out for blood. They want revenge. And so, but I don't think there's any there. So they are forced to reduce to trying to get people on what they call process crimes so that they can say that, you know, they have a notch in their belt. But they really don't have any notches in their belt when it comes to Russian collusion. All right, stay tuned. Lots more after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are. When a young mom sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
This mom chose life for her baby.
She's been such a joy. Her name even means rebirth and sort of being raised up from the ashes. I now see my daughter, and I cannot imagine my life without my happy, lovely, joyful, smart baby, and I'm so grateful.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
It gives an impetus to share your faith when you think you've got answers to objections that you expect people to bring up.
The American Family Studios video series, Intro to God's Revelation, featuring Dr. Richard Howe, shows how God has revealed himself in nature and his word, and how we can rightly understand what God has said.
These truths are just a part and parcel of the Christian life. It isn't just for the professional clergy.
Learn the fundamentals of how to approach and understand the Bible in an age of skepticism. This 6-week video curriculum is perfect for your Sunday school class or study group, and it can prepare you to give a defense of God's word and how he speaks to us in nature.
Knowing whether and how God communicates is a safeguard against false claims about God communicating.
Intro to God's Revelation, DVDs and workbook, are available for purchase at afastore.net or call 877-927-4917.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's been a lot of conversation around the water cooler and the coffee shops about the entitlement generation. Young people coming out of school expecting to have life handed to them on a silver platter. Mike Gundy, the head coach of the Oklahoma State football team, had something to say about that the other day.
We allow liberalism to say, hey, I could just do what I want and I don't have to really be tough and fight through it. And you see that with young people because it's an option they're given. We weren't given that option when we were growing up. We were told what to do. We did it the right way, or you go figure it out on your own. In the world today, there's a lot of entitlement. I'm a firm believer in the snowflake.
The coach is right, and we need to do something about it. We are Americans. When the going gets tough, we don't throw in the towel. We don't look for someone else to blame. We buckle down, and we get the job done. It's called personal responsibility. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In response, President Trump hammered the special counsel's office, tweeting, "The phony witch hunt continues, but Mueller and his gang of angry Dems are only looking at one side, not the other. Wait until it comes out how horribly and viciously they are treating people, ruining lives for them refusing to lie. Mueller is a conflicted prosecutor gone rogue." Sources tell Fox News the special counsel's office has been pressing Manafort for information about President Trump, in particular the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting Don Jr. had with a Russian attorney and whether President Trump knew about it in advance. Sources also tell Fox News Mueller's investigators have been pressing conservative writer Jerome Corsi for information on President Trump and whether Corsi had contact with WikiLeaks about hacked Democratic emails. Corsi, who expects to be indicted on charges of lying to investigators, says Mueller offered him a plea deal in exchange for his cooperation. Corsi claims he told the truth to the FBI and is rejecting a plea deal, saying he will not lie to save his life. Sources tell Fox News the reason why President Trump is so upset at the special counsel's office is because he believes that Mueller's investigators have been unnecessarily harsh on witnesses, particularly Paul Manafort, in order to try to get something on the president. So far, other than Michael Cohen, no one else has chosen to or has a reason to flip on the president. Brett?
John Roberts.
So I just wanted you to hear that second part. It's isn't it something? I mean, really, we have watched it's a circus, a tragic circus, because it has to do with the trust in our judicial system. How can we trust this? How can we trust this? And I talked about Jerome Corsi a few minutes ago. One thing I can assure you, I do not think Jerome Corsi would lie. I just don't. I just don't think he would lie. And so, you know, he's frightened. But he says, I'm not going to lie. They're not going to force me to lie. And so here we go. And he'll probably be put in jail. And won't that be a proud moment for Bob Mueller? And remember that the other people, when he claims, you know, his notches in his belt, I think he says, I think it's something like 27 indictments or something like that. But many of those are Russian nationals and Russian companies who are not going to be coming back here. It's kind of like it's a charade. He knew when he indicted them, he would not be able to bring them back here. And I doubt very seriously that if there was collusion, we would find it at this end, right? We wouldn't have to go to Russia to find it. There was collusion, but it wasn't with President Trump. There was collusion with Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. There's just no question about it. But of course, as President Trump says, Bob Mueller is not looking into that part of the equation. Only President Trump. Just relentless. It's amazing. All right, so I mentioned the closeness between Bob Mueller and James Comey. And James Comey's been quiet for a while, but he spoke up this last few days to do a real hit job, at least a subtle hit job, on Matt Whitaker, the acting attorney general, who, from all accounts that I've read, is very competent, has a great record, but I guess Comey doesn't think so. Let's hear what he had to say.
He may not be the sharpest knife in our drawer, but he can see his future and knows that if he acted in an extra legal way, he would go down in history for the wrong reasons. And I'm sure he doesn't want that.
Sounds like a warning to me, don't you think? Man, it's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see which side prevails on this? In terms of just what's happening in D.C., the balance of power is still hanging by threads. You know, I point to this. You still have people in the Trump administration undermining him. Don't think that they've left. It's just amazing to me how determined never-Trumper Republicans are to make him fail. At all costs, they want him to fail. And that seems to me to be an act of pride. They want desperately to be right about him. They didn't like him. They thought he was a buffoon. He couldn't possibly be president. And now he's president and he's actually doing an excellent job, but they cannot admit that. And they must be right, you see, at all costs. It's their reputation to heck with the country. So you're seeing that. And then you're also seeing what's happening in Congress. And since the Republicans lost the House, it's going to be a struggle because the House is going to come after him, the president, with guns blazing. And to kind of make that point, there's an interesting report from Judicial Watch about Maxine Waters, who is probably one of his archest foes, if there is such a word, archest foes. Judicial Watch went back into Maxine Waters' record, and actually I knew some of it, but I did not remember these details. Who can remember all of this? And this is what they report. Considering her record and documented history of poor ethical and moral fitness, it's outrageous that Maxine Waters is up for chair of the ultra-powerful House Financial Services Committee, which has jurisdiction over the country's banking system, economy, housing, and insurance. With Democrats taking control of the House come January, the 14-term California Congresswoman is expected to head the committee, which also has jurisdiction over monetary policy, international finance, and efforts to combat terrorist financing. Why are we concerned? Well, I will read on. Throughout her storied political career, Waters has been embroiled in numerous controversies, including abusing her power to enrich family members, getting a communist dictator to harbor a cop murdering Black Panther fugitive still wanted by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and accusing the Central Intelligence Agency of selling crack cocaine in Black neighborhoods. A few months ago, the 80-year-old Democrat from Los Angeles encouraged violence against Trump administration cabinet members, and you know all about that. If you see them in public places, you know, harass them. They don't deserve to be there. They don't have a right. You create a crowd, you push back, and you know the statement. That's what we remember most about her, but there's a lot more before this. She's been around a long time. One of the things that she did was she allocated $12 million to a Massachusetts bank in which she and her board member husband held shares. This was during the financial crisis. It's called One United, and you may remember that it was called TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, and it was bailing out banks, but supposedly only healthy banks. Only One United wasn't a healthy bank. It was chosen prior to the bailout. The bank received a less than satisfactory rating, and yet Maxine, in her position in the House, managed to get $12 million for herself and her husband and the bank that they were responsible for. That's just one small part. She represents Los Angeles's poorest inner city neighborhoods. She's helped family members make more than $1 million through business ventures with companies and causes. She lives in a $4.5 million Los Angeles mansion. And meanwhile, her constituents get poorer and poorer. She was embroiled in a fundraising scandal where she was selling her endorsement to other politicians for as much as $45,000 apiece. She's made worldwide headlines for her frequent trips to communist Cuba to visit her convicted cop assassin friend, Joanne Chesimard. She's on the FBI's most wanted list. She was also a Black Panther named Asada Shakur. She was convicted and sentenced to life in prison because she murdered a New Jersey state trooper. But she escaped, and she's been hiding out in Cuba. She's very close to Maxine Waters, who loves her and has defended her to Fidel Castro. And it's just, I could go on and on. This is a very long article. By the way, we'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read it. That's Maxine Waters, who will now head up the House Financial Services Committee over our banking system, our economy, housing, insurance. Yeah. So there you go. And then Daniel Greenfield, who also writes as Sultan Key. She's been our guest a few times on this show, has a new article called The New Crooked Congressional Black Caucus. In the last decade, every single House Democrat sent to prison for financial crimes was a Congressional Black Caucus member. In the last 20 years, it's been over 80%. After the midterms, the CBC has grown past a record 50 members. But it doesn't mean it's getting better. Power makes it worse. And then he mentions a freshman, Ilhan Omar, famous freshman, coming into the 116th Congress. First Somali-American, first Muslim woman. She's also the first member of Congress who had to deny being married to her brother. And he goes, and I remember reading this story during the election cycle. It's been a while. So she denies it, but she's been going after people that claim it. But it looks as though she really is married to her brother, or at least was married to her brother. There's a lot to say about her, but let me go on because I can't read it all. The Congressional Black Caucus has achieved a record number of seats, so it's a power player in the new Democratic House majority. And CBC leaders are demanding a status in the Democratic leadership commensurate with their growing numbers. So, in other words, they are really threatening Nancy Pelosi if they don't get chairmanships. You've heard Maxine Waters do that. The caucus forms somewhat less than a quarter of the Democratic House majority and is the core of Representative Pelosi's support. But the Congressional Black Caucus is rotten with everything from corruption to anti-Semitism. Its newfound power will allow CBC leaders even more scope for corruption and abuse. Numerous CBC members have faced ethics investigations. Three have been sent to prison in the last 5 years, and a significant number have met with Farrakhan, that's Louis Farrakhan, or attended Nation of Islam events, which of course is notoriously anti-Semitic, among other things. I don't have time to read all this, but I want to go to the end where Daniel says, the freshman class of the CBC brings in more political radicalism, but that's not unusual in a caucus that includes Representative Barbara Lee and Representative Maxine Waters. Radicalism is a mask that CBC corruption often wears, and the two have come to comfortably coexist in the corrupt arrangements of a caucus that acts as the mercenaries for the Democratic establishment and any corporation willing to pay the bills. The CBC has topped 50 members for the first time, but that's not a victory for civil rights. It's a triumph of corruption. And I believe Daniel's right about this, and of course this has nothing to do with color. These are the people who've managed to take power. These are the people who've managed to take control, and they are corrupt to the core. You know, Alan West talked about that a lot when he was in Congress. The wrong people of color are in that caucus. It's a disgrace. And of course, there are enough white corrupt congressmen to, you could say, we could point that too. And I just want to make sure that you understand, I'm not talking about color. I'm talking about character. And that's what's making up the Congressional Black Caucus. And it is disgraceful. A couple of things. I've kind of struck a theme in the last few days, and I don't plan to stop because I really, really feel it's just imperative that Americans understand that they are being propagandized by media. It is a very serious problem, and it really isn't new. It was taking place when I was young. Walter Cronkite was the chief propagandist. He was America's trusted news source, and I know for a fact that he lied every night about the number of coat hanger abortions. I know that he was an anti-Vietnam War advocate. He kept that close to the vest. We didn't know he was a radical leftist himself, and his reporting reflected that, and we all thought it was true, didn't we? But now it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse, and if you think I'm making this up, consider this. Here's an article, again in Fox. Melania Trump is unveiling the Christmas decorations in the White House. By the way, they're breathtaking, and I had the privilege of being in the White House during the Bush years for the Christmas party. I'll never forget it. It was one of the most wonderful nights of my life. I've got wonderful pictures. It's just gorgeous. Melania's decorations in the White House this year are beautiful, but you'd never know that by reading the media. So second year in a row, she's being attacked, mocked, and even vilified for the People's House holiday furnishings. Mainstream media outlets such as The Post, USA Today, Time, HuffPost, San Francisco Chronicle, and Vice all mocked the decorations, masking their disdain by focusing on the backlash of trolls on social media. House Beautiful, a lifestyle magazine geared towards interior decorators, launched a full-blown attack on the decorations with a feature headline, "So, the 2018 White House Christmas theme is apparently The Shining." The piece features snarky commentary such as, "Another year in the Trump White House, another opportunity to add a touch of holiday magic to the banality of evil." The overwhelming feeling of dread was one of the many sources of inspiration for this year's decorations. I could go on, and you could understand this is the theme. This is what they're saying. And so if you had doubt, when I tell you that the news media is lying to you, and if you only listen to those sources or watch mainstream news, you don't really know what's true. Consider this. They ignore Melania Trump. She's been on no magazine covers at all. Melania Trump is gorgeous. She's absolutely beautiful, but they want you to think that she's ugly and unworthy. And so they ignore her and ridicule her. She has fabulous fashion taste. Has anyone seen her clothing when she's traveling? Look, I love beautiful clothes. I love fashion. And actually, I will kind of rely on my own judgment on this. She looks great. She looks fabulous. Her clothes are wonderful. But no, they mock what she wears. They don't give her any credit. She has no fashion sense, according to them. She speaks six languages. I think it's six, fluently, but she's dumb. And so they mock her. She is, by the way, an immigrant. She's a legal immigrant. And they continually, rather than praise her as they love illegal immigrants, as they love immigrants of all kind, they consistently mock Melania Trump. Now, I ask you, if you didn't see with your own eyes her beauty and her fashion sense, and hear with your own ears her ability to speak at least in one language, too. I guess when she went overseas, we've heard her speak in other languages, not all six. If you didn't hear with your own ears that she's actually brilliant, that she's actually beautiful, you would not know that. You think she was dumb, stupid, unfashionable, that the White House looks terrible, and that's not true. That's fake news. Those are lies being fed to the American people, and that is, I think, makes my point. As well as anything can make it, you can see with your own eyes that they are lying to you. And so if they'd lie to you about something as really cruel but not impactful as the quality and character of the First Lady of the United States, why? What makes you think that they're telling you the truth when they talk about Donald Trump and what he's accomplishing, or the Republicans in Congress, or conservative groups like the American Family Association, or fill in the blank. It's just endless. There's another example I was going to give you, but I'm going to save it because it's actually excellent. When we return, we have something really interesting, something that you can participate in that I think you'll be interested in. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What is the proper role of government? Romans chapter 13 outlines government's function, and it is basically this: to restrain or to punish wickedness and to reward righteousness. Government was never intended to be our savior. Government is our servant. As we focus on our civil occupations and our civic engagement responsibilities, let us never forget that government is not our God. We don't put our trust in it. We put our trust in our Christ. As a result, what we want is a government that stays out of our way and leaves room for our church to do our business of fulfilling the Great Commission.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Sheila from Tennessee attended one of the town hall meetings hosted by Dan Celia. She left thinking about different ways to handle her finances.
Dan Celia spoke a lot about tithing and being faithful to the Lord, and I definitely intend on getting in on this charitable gift annuity, which I've never done, but it sounds so exciting. Listening to him in there, it made me reevaluate my way of spending money, my way of doing, and it shows you that a little bit can go a long way when you place it in the Master's hands. So what we need to do, and what I intend on doing, is taking the little bit and making it be worth much for the Lord.
Find out if a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation is right for you at 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The first test of the kind of House Republican minority leader Kevin McCarthy will be is at hand. He'll be leading a selection process this week for the top GOP members of key committees in the next Congress. If Representative McCarthy will be a principal champion of the sorts of causes that led the Republicans to victory in the House in 2016, namely, the perception that they would support candidate Trump's agenda on building the wall, repealing Obamacare, defeating radical Islamic terrorism, etc., he will ensure that robust conservative lawmakers like Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows are tapped. They will work tirelessly to prevent Democratic abuses of power on the Judiciary and Oversight Committees, respectively. If Mr. McCarthy instead opts for cronies and yes-men, he will be seriously disserving his president, party, and country, perhaps with politically fatal effect in 2020. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The attack comes hours after Sergeant Leandro Jasso, an elite Army Ranger killed battling al-Qaeda fighters in southwest Afghanistan near the border with Iran, returned home. His flag-draped coffin landed at Dover Air Force Base just before midnight. He was killed during his third combat deployment to Afghanistan.
We extend our thoughts and prayers to the loved ones of those killed and to those recovering. The United States is grateful for their service and forever in debt of their sacrifice.
Hours later, a roadside bomb killed three American troops and wounded another three troops and an American contractor in Ghazni City, where just a few days ago, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan was photographed carrying his M4 rifle during a routine meeting with local leaders, a deterrent message that raised some eyebrows a month after General Miller found himself in the midst of a firefight, a symbol of how dangerous this area close to the capital has become. The four wounded Americans were flown by helicopter to a U.S. military hospital. The Pentagon is withholding the names of those killed and wounded, awaiting next of kin notifications. The attack followed a deadly bombing last week that left more than 50 Afghan Muslim religious leaders dead in Kabul and coincided with a peace conference in Geneva, attended by the Afghan president and U.S. ambassador.
It's a different Afghanistan. We are open for business. I hope you are open for partnership.
The United States will
continue to be a strong partner of everyone in Afghanistan, whether it's inside government or outside government.
79 U.S. troops have been severely wounded in Afghanistan this year. 12 Americans have now been killed in combat, among them Major Brent Taylor, a Utah mayor and father of seven who served in the National Guard.
The price of freedom surely feels incredibly high to all those of us who know and love our individual soldier. But the value of freedom is immeasurable to all who know and love America and all that she represents.
That was the widow of that mayor in Utah who was killed, who has, what, seven children? That was the last voice that you heard. And I wanted you to hear that report from Jennifer Griffin because I have to say, in the midst of all the elections and all the pressures and all the other news, that I have not mentioned that tragic loss of life in Afghanistan in a long time. And I wanted to remind you, as I remind myself, that our young men and some women are on the battlefield, you know, defending freedom every day. While back home here, we battle these political things. These guys are out there really fighting for the country. And in the sense that they are fighting to defend freedom, you know, Afghanistan was taken over by the Taliban and also by Al-Qaeda. It became a training ground. And so that's one of the reasons we still have a presence there. But look at the price. Think of those families, 12 killed recently. Those families, American families who are going to spend Christmas without their sons. I mean, it's just, we just cannot. We cannot just not remember that. We need to pray for them. If you are anywhere near any of them, we need to, you know, pour out our support to families. So anyway, I just wanted to remind you, it's a dangerous world out there. It continues to be dangerous. And while we live here at home in peace, at least right now, it's not because there's no price to be paid for that. A price is being paid on the backs of these young men and some women. So we have a project with American Family Association through our Engage Ministries that I wanted to bring to your attention. And its beginnings are really reminiscent of the kind of conflict we're just talking about in Afghanistan. Cedar Sarton is with the magazine, Engage Magazine. Cedar was our guest recently, but now they are embarking on another project for this Christmas. Cedar, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Sandy, for having me on.
Hey, let's talk about the very first time you guys did this, what we call the Orange Letter campaign, the reason for the name and what the project was.
Well, on February the 15th, 2015, ISIS released a video of 21 Egyptian Christians being beheaded, and they were all wearing these orange jumpsuits. So the color orange just came to signify the persecution that Christians go through. And we were able to partner with our friends at Uncharted Ministries to be able to reach out to the families that were left behind. And an overwhelming 3,000 letters poured in from listeners of love and support and encouragement to our sisters and brothers in Christ over there in Egypt. And our friends at Uncharted helped to translate and hand deliver these letters. And when they came back, they told us it was just an overwhelming response of these people crying and hugging these letters because they meant so much to them.
Isn't that something? See, Dreyri, you know, when you tell that story, I'm sure we can all still see those people lined up on the shore of the ocean there. And we didn't see the beheadings, but we knew that they happened. And I remember there was a story of one guy who was not a Christian, but he, right there, kneeling in front of his executor, said, I want to serve their God. And he was executed, too. It's just such a dramatic story. Mm-hmm. So that was the origin of this Orange Letter campaign. And then later, Engage Ministries did the same thing for Syrian pastors.
Yeah, we reached out to the Syrian pastors. They also had letters hand-delivered to them. And then we went, the following year, we reached out to North Korea, which was a little bit different because we're not able to physically deliver the letters to people in North Korea. But they were able to deliver some to ones who had defected to South Korea and let them have the letters. But they kind of had to find a unique way to reach the ones in North Korea by radio broadcast.
Yes. Oh, man. I know all about that. You know, Cedra, you probably don't know, but I was the first chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. And, of course, now they've gone on to develop a sophisticated source of getting broadcast information into North Korea, which is a whole other issue, but it's just terrific. I'm so delighted that we were partnering with the North Korean defectors. Okay, so this year you're partnering with Uncharted Ministries and Voice of the Martyrs to get letters to who?
We are reaching out to some Nigerian widows. Nigeria is typically a secular country with freedom of religion, but in the north, they tend to favor Muslims and discriminate against Christians. And their churches are being burned down. People are being killed just for being a Christian. And there's a lot of families left behind that are in mourning and are hurting and sometimes, I guess, feel isolated. And so we just want to let them know that we still remember them and that we are praying for them.
So the idea then is, and a lot of most Nigerians read English, so that's not an issue. Mm-hmm. So the letters can actually be read by them. So Cedra, let's pretend like you're writing a letter. What would you say? I mean, like, what kinds of things are you looking for?
It's really simple. Just sit down, and if you have a prayer for them, write it down. If you don't know what to say, but some scripture comes to your mind that you think will offer comfort, write that in there. Just whatever in the moment you're feeling like you're being led to say, just let them know. It can be as simple as letting them know that you love them and that you care for them and that you will be praying for them.
Okay, so just to be clear, Cedra, when you say write a letter, are you talking about composing something on email and sending it?
Yes. We have an email account that you can send to orange@afa.net, real simple. Just send your letters there, and we will get those to our friends at Uncharted, who will make sure that these Nigerian widows are given their letters.
And so if people want to read more about the background on these widows, just to kind of get inspiration, is there a place at Engage to do that?
Yes. If you go to engagemagazine.net, and right now on the very front page, we have several articles up just giving background detail and what's going on in Nigeria and just discussing persecution in general and then how you can help. So there are several links for you to go to where you can read about it.
All right, engagemagazine.net to read more about it. And then if you want to send a letter, this is the email address, orange@afa.net. I'm guessing that address is also on engagemagazine.net, right?
Yes, it is.
To make it easy. Okay, orange@afa.net. We'll put this information on our Facebook page so that you can access it as well. And remember, Engage Magazine is our ministry to millennials. It's just, and we talked about that recently on the air, but I want you to know that AFA is all over that. Trying to create some serious Christ following, or to encourage serious Christ following millennials to stay the course on all the issues and to be informed. And that's what Cedra is very involved in. Cedra Sarton with Engage Magazine. Cedra, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy, for taking the time to talk to me. And I hope that you and the listeners will continue to pray for this project.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Cedra, thank you so much.
Awesome.
All right, well, I was just talking to you about my theme is Pravda. And, of course, my husband said to me yesterday, you realize that a lot of people don't know what Pravda is. So I guess I should explain. Some things we take for granted. You know, we'll pick on Russia just for now. Russia was behind the Iron Curtain after World War II. Stalin shut off the country. Conquered a lot of the Eastern European countries like Ukraine, Poland, all of those countries, and brought them into this web and sealed them off behind what was called the Iron Curtain. And they ruled the Iron Curtain with an iron fist. There was no freedom to travel. Everyone made the same meager living. That was communism, after all, except for the elites. They did fine. They did just fine. I'll never forget when I met a KGB agent in West Berlin when I lived there in a beautiful shopping mall. It wasn't a mall. It was a shopping center. We were on the second floor, and he had a huge fur coat on, and I chatted with him. I didn't know he was with the KGB. I found out later. But he was just dressed opulently. Trust me, the Russian people didn't dress that way, and they didn't have the freedom to travel. So he was one of their leaders. Communism was always a ruse. It was about a few people getting all the stuff. while the rest of the people fancy that they're all equal. It's all a tremendous lie. It kills people's spirits. It kills their incentive. It controls it. And of course, communism was notorious for being godless. There is no God. The state is God. So people worship these statues. They eliminated all cultural history so that the beautiful, beautiful things that came out of Russian history, like the icons, which of course are not, I don't think they're scriptural, but they're beautiful, of the Russian Orthodox Church, the paintings that they did, all of the history of the Russian Orthodox Church were all silenced and squelched. And all evidences of Christianity or worship of God were removed. Now, along with that came control of information. You couldn't just like pick up the daily newspaper and read what was happening in the world. You had no idea what was happening in the world unless you read Pravda. Well, of course, Pravda was nothing but propaganda. It was what they wanted you to know and what they wanted you to believe. The same thing was true with Radio Moscow. Radio Moscow was broadcasting in a ton of languages to all these satellite countries that they had taken captive, feeding them lies morning to night. They were absolutely profoundly fabulous at propaganda. I think they probably learned something from the Nazis, who were also great at propaganda, which means simply that either not telling the whole story or giving you lies. And so public schools then. I remember, gosh, I do remember this. I couldn't imagine it when I was a kid, the fact that Russian children in public school were learning false history. I remembered that they were being taught that Russians had invented everything, cars, radios, electricity. They had a story for all of it. And that's what Russian children thought. It was a world filled with propaganda and lies. So when I tell you that this is what's happening in our culture, now, of course, the difference is we do have other sources of information, but right now, social media, Facebook, Twitter, Google, they're all looking for ways to limit our ability to actually speak out. So trust me, if they have their way, we will be silenced. So I'm just telling you, if you do not listen to conservative media of some sort, whether it's on television or on radio or American Family Radio, you don't know everything. Trust me, you don't know half of it. And that's what's happening with your neighbors. And that's why you're becoming at odds more and more with your neighbors and your family members, because they have a different universe of understanding. They are being lied to. It's propaganda. It's Pravda. And Radio Moscow all over again. And so along with that, I had the second story I was going to share with you. I mentioned Melania Trump as kind of an easy example to understand. She is, you might think she's beautiful because you see it. You think, gosh, she's beautiful. But she's not, according to media. And she's dumb. She speaks six languages, but according to them, yeah, she's really dumb. And listen to how she talks. She's an immigrant, but not their kind of immigrant. She decorated the White House beautifully. She decorates herself beautifully, but it looks stupid. It's disgraceful. How embarrassing. And so this is how it goes. It's a story. It's made up. It's like the anti-Camelot. And so Deborah Burlingame, who I know, Deborah's brother was the pilot that flew that plane that went down on that Pennsylvania field on 9/11. She's brilliant herself. And she brings up this whole nonsense about Khashoggi being killed by the Saudis. That's not a good story. Nobody's happy about that. But she says, where was the press for the last 16 years when two presidents and the FBI led by Robert Mueller covered up Saudi Arabia's involvement in the deaths of 3,000 people? Where was their outrage when members of Congress helped suppress 28 pages of their own intelligence report detailing Saudi Arabia's material support for the hijackers who boarded U.S. passenger planes on 9/11? And she goes on with much more, but her point is well taken. It was the Saudis. It was, 15 Saudis who took down those towers and went down on that field and hit the Pentagon. But nobody was concerned about that right now. And so Deborah Burlingame points out another example of fake fraud news. All right, so I think I've made my point for today, but of course I'll probably try to make it again tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.